Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Return to Washington. President-elect Donald Trump meets with President Joe Biden as the transition moves forward. We're at the White House. Leadership on the Hill. Lawmakers vote on important positions in both houses of Congress. Conditions on the ground. A report from Haiti after both the United States and United Nations suspend air travel to the Caribbean nation. Plus, a leading role. Pope Francis reminds the faithful that the Blessed Virgin Mary can bring us closer to Christ. We'll explain these stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Francis Cabrini. Our top story tonight, we are tracking a historic meeting at the White House. President-elect Donald Trump returned to the Oval Office to meet President Joe Biden. The two leaders promised a smooth transition from one administration to the next. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. The meeting between Biden and Trump lasted about 2 hours. It was described as substantive. They talked about domestic and foreign policy issues. And here's the handshake that got things going.
President-elect and former president,
thank you,
Donald, congratulations.
Thank you.
And looking forward to having, like we said, a smooth transition. Do everything we can to make sure you're accommodated, what you need. And we're going to get a chance to talk about some of that today.
So. Good.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much. And politics is tough. And it's, in many cases, not a very nice world, but it is a nice world today. And I appreciate it very much. And a transition that's so smooth, it'll be as smooth as it can get. And I very much appreciate that, Jim.
You're welcome.
Members of the press tried to ask questions, but President Joe Biden and President-elect Donald Trump did not respond. Before Trump traveled to the White House, he first landed at Joint Base Andrews. From there, he stopped at a D.C. hotel to talk to House Republicans.
Well, I just want to thank everybody. You've been incredible. We worked with a lot of you to get you in, and you helped me, and you helped me, too.
Trump also endorsed Mike Johnson to remain as Speaker of the House. Johnson praised Trump's election win.
They used to call Bill Clinton the comeback kid. This is the comeback king. He is the king. Okay.
Still, the president-elect raised eyebrows when he nominated a Fox News host to serve as the next Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, a military veteran who joined the Army National Guard after graduating from college, serving abroad in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay, would oversee America's response to the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East. And Biden's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, addressed reporters at today's White House press briefing.
I will observe that transitions are uniquely consequential moments in geopolitics. They're a time when competitors and adversaries can see possibly opportunity because you have this change in government here.
Also tonight, Donald Trump has selected former Democratic lawmaker and presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard to serve as Director of National Intelligence. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you so much, Owen. And the president-elect's picks for defense secretary may seem made for TV. Pete Hegseth is a host on Fox News Channel. The 44-year-old has been awarded two Bronze Star medals. In addition, he has degrees from two Ivy League universities, Princeton and Harvard. However, he lacks senior military or national security experience. And reports say that some people within the Pentagon are, quote, stunned by the president-elect's pick. After more, we turn now to David DeRoche, an associate professor at the Near East South Asia Center for Security Studies. He is also an airborne ranger in the Army Reserve. Sir, thank you so much for your time today, and we thank you for your service. As we mentioned, some people were a bit shocked by President-elect Trump's pick of Pete Hegseth. But what about you, and what qualifications do you think are imperative in this type of role?
Yeah, it's an unorthodox pick, and it's an unorthodox pick, and I'm not sure that it necessarily the skill set matches up with what the Department of Defense needs. Look, the Department of Defense doesn't really need combat leaders. I felt that appointing generals to Secretary of Defense was a bad move and said so at the time. What it needs is organizational talent, somebody who's led a large organization, and somebody who has experience. Our real challenges are reactivating the defense base and reforming procurement. So I think we need somebody with more of an industrial or a financial background There are, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of Americans who've served in combat. That's not really what that office needs. So it remains to be seen what will happen. But all that being said, the most important thing any cabinet head could have would be the trust of the president. So I think that at least for now, that's a good sign. He probably will get a mandate to implement what he needs to do. I think that there are advisors around President Trump who can point to the priorities of the department. I don't think that they are what's getting publicized right now.
Yeah, and also talk to us about really the important role of the Secretary of Defense, especially now as the United States faces threats on numerous fronts.
Yeah, good question. So the Secretary of Defense doesn't really develop war plans. He's not really the wartime commander. He's the leader of the organizational base. Now, he develops policy and he approves all these because he is in the chain of command, unlike the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. But really, what he needs to be doing is appointing and overseeing combatant commanders who develop and implement combat actions in the war plans. And he needs to focus on the institutional base of the defense enterprise. That includes acquisition, research and development, procurement, personnel development. Those are all big, big, big functions that usually you have to have a background in organizational management, organizational leadership, finance, in order to do effectively. And combat service doesn't come into that. So it's kind of a conflation. People assume, you know, well, if the guy has to be a pilot, be the Secretary of the Air Force. That's not the case for civilian leadership.
Yeah. I want to ask you this. We don't have a whole lot of time left. But Pete Hegseth made comments about opposing women in combat roles and saying he's not a fan of this diversity, equity and inclusion that's in the military right now. Quickly, your thoughts on that. And is that something that he could even change being at the helm of the Defense Department?
I think he could make some differences along the margins, but it's very, very hard when you've had a policy that's been in place for 20 years to reverse it, particularly when there'll be women who will say, for example, if this policy is reversed, my career opportunities will be damaged. So it's going to be hard.
All right. David, thank you so much for your time today and for your service. Again, we appreciate it. God bless.
God bless.
Well, the controversial picks don't stop there. There are also two billionaires added to the mix. The president-elect says that he is creating a department to look into government efficiency, and it will be led by tech giant Elon Musk and former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy. Special counsel Jack Smith, who is working to end his federal prosecutions of Donald Trump, is stepping down. A justice official says that Smith intends to resign before Trump returns to the White House. Smith's investigation into Trump's alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 election and his handling of classified documents led to several federal charges. Trump previously said that he would quickly fire Smith if he returned to the Oval Office. Well, a big day on Capitol Hill with Republican leadership in both the House and the Senate at stake. GOP lawmakers spent the day picking those who will take charge and lead the new Congress starting in January. President Trump, in a meeting with House Republicans this morning, formally endorsed Speaker Mike Johnson to keep his position, while Senator John Thune of South Dakota becomes the new Republican leader. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with the latest. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, let's start with the Senate leadership elections that took place. It took a couple of hours and two ballots, but Republican senators picked John Thune to be the Senate GOP leader. He is a four-term lawmaker from South Dakota and former Republican whip. He takes over from Mitch McConnell, who is stepping down after a record 18 years as leader. Three senators were vying for the job. That's Rick Scott of Florida, who was endorsed by supporters of President-elect Donald Trump, and John Cornyn of Texas. And Thune, of course. Senator Scott was eliminated after the first round of balloting, and Republicans then elected Thune a short time later, beating Senator Cornyn 29-24. Senator Thune then stepped up to the mic and declared it's a new day in the Senate.
The American people have loudly rejected the failed policies of the Biden-Harris-Schumer agenda. And this Republican team is united. We are on one team. We are excited to reclaim the majority and to get to work with our colleagues in the House to enact President Trump's agenda.
Republicans were focused on the needs of the American people, people who wanted to get prices down, wanted to secure the border, wanted us to unleash American energy. People wanted to make America look and be strong once again.
From Thune, you're going to see a true bottom-up approach where we're going to all be involved. Decisions are going to be made. Now, it's the Republican conference. Not everybody's going to be happy with decisions, but the majority of the conference will be where we need to be.
I congratulate Senator Thune on being chosen by his colleagues as the next Republican leader. I look forward to working with him. We've done many bipartisan things here in the Senate together, and I hope that continues.
Florida Senator Rick Scott issued a statement afterwards saying in part, quote, I ran for leader with one mission, to fundamentally change how the Senate operates and upend the status quo so we can actually start representing the voters who put us here. Senator Thune says the filibuster, which allows the minority party to stop a bill in the Senate, will remain. I did ask Senator Thune's staff about the concerns that several conservative Republicans had, wondering if their views will fall on deaf ears. Now, the Senate staff told me that Leader Thune is dedicated to implementing the agenda of President-elect Donald Trump, and all voices will be heard. Then I followed up with another question. When are we going to start to see the mass deportations of illegal migrants? His press secretary told me that the border is one of the issues that got President Trump reelected, and that's a priority for all Republicans in Congress, and come January, changes will take place, allowing for the president's agenda to get done. As for the Republican-controlled House, as Tracy mentioned, House Speaker Mike Johnson will, in fact, be Speaker again. The big question is who's going to replace Elise Stefanik as conference chair? Voting is expected later tonight, and I've learned that the president-elect has offered Congressman Matt Gaetz to serve as the U.S. Attorney General, a man Trump says is focused on achieving desperately needed reform in the Department of Justice. However, Gaetz is currently under investigation for a number of ethics violations. If confirmed, those investigations would go away. But even some Republican senators I've talked to said that he is not going to get their vote, and they're calling the appointment controversial. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Eric. And in other news, two employees have died and 11 others injured after an explosion at a factory in Louisville, Kentucky. The blast occurred at a business that produces coloring and for food and drinks. It caused a partial collapse of the building and blew out windows in nearby homes. The company says that it is in the early stages of investigating the cause and is cooperating with authorities. In the Middle East, an Israeli strike in northern Gaza kills three siblings, all ages 6 and younger. Several other people were killed. This comes as a strike on an apartment building left several others dead or injured. Meanwhile, a man who worked for the U.S. government has been charged with leaking classified information around Israel's plans to attack Iran. The man was arrested by the FBI this week in Cambodia. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including new prime minister, new wave of violence. Haiti is facing a new crisis and the closing of its main airport. And pause no more, a church leader from the U.S. tells us about his recent trip to Ukraine. The United Nations is temporarily suspending flights to the capital of Haiti. This comes after gangs shot at two planes, prompting U.S. officials to prohibit flights there for 30 days. Security was heavy outside of the airport not long after street gangs opened fire on the airplanes as they landed. One flight attendant was injured. The violence came after the country swore in a new prime minister and forced the closings of schools along with banks and government offices. And for more, we turn now to Stephan Dessen, Director General of PROCH, also known as the Partnership for Reconstruction of the Church in Haiti. And he joins us now from Haiti. Stephan, good to be with you. So what are you seeing on the ground there in Haiti now? And have things calmed down since the most recent violence happened over the past few days?
Things have not come down so far. The violence has continued in the area of the Port-au-Prince area, where we feel like the gangs are expanding toward the rest of the town, trying to take the town of the area called Isua and then some other town. So if they continue at that rate, it's just a matter of days before they take over the capital, I would say about 100%.
How are you feeling right now? I mean, do you feel safe?
Right now, It's really dicey because we had to, like, the office had to move, and right now we're in the Pétionville area, which is not too far from the Port-au-Prince area. So we're about 10 minutes away from Port-au-Prince. So I do feel that Pétionville is at risk if the gangs continue moving in the same direction and at the same ease that they've been doing in the past few days.
Well, we're praying for you. What a scary time. You know, as we said, the U.S. flights, too, and U.N. flights are not arriving at the country's main airport, and it's not going to happen anytime soon. On a practical level, what does this mean?
It actually means that the humanitarian effort that has been reaching the people in the South, especially after the earthquake that happened in 2021, will stop. It will mean that most of the effort that the international community have been promised to Haiti, as far as equipment, manpower to fight the gangs, these efforts will also stop. So at this particular point, I feel like it's very important for the incoming government to sit down and think about how they can come up with solutions to address the gangs that are occupying the area around the airport, especially in the east side and the west side of the airport. Because when the plane comes, we just have basically one main runway. So if the plane lands on the east side and the west side, both of these areas, I would say a few kilometers out, are occupied by gangs. So we can easily come up with threats and damage planes that they've done on Monday, where they've managed to damage the planes from Spirit Airlines, American Airlines, and also JetBlue. So it's very important that they address those issues and tackle them in order for the other efforts, as far as humanitarian efforts, and also the other groups that are supposed to come here and reinforce the local police force to address the insecurities that we've been seeing in the past months, or I should say a couple of years.
Stephen, this is also very concerning. We are out of time, but we're praying for you all in Haiti, and please keep us posted and stay safe. God bless.
Thank you.
All right, now to the war in Ukraine, where Russia has ramped up its strikes at Kyiv and surrounding areas, ending a two-month pause in such attacks on the capital. In a meeting in Brussels, both the Ukrainian foreign minister and Secretary of State Antony Blinken stressed the importance of fighting off Russia's invasion.
Russians once again targeted innocent people, children, entire families, while they slept peacefully in their homes. Russians commit war crimes and attack civilian people and infrastructure every night and day. We must stop the aggressor with the strength of weapons, sanctions, and diplomacy.
This is a critical moment because we see, first, the ongoing Russian onslaught against Ukraine in the east, as well as against civilians, against critical energy infrastructure.
One church leader traveled to Ukraine in October, and he saw firsthand the stark reality of the suffering caused by the war. And Archbishop William Laurie joins us now. Your Excellency, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. I know that you and a delegation from the Knights of Columbus visited Ukraine. Would you mind telling us more about that visit and what you witnessed?
It was a visit that I made on behalf of the Knights of Columbus, and really delivering a very simple message on behalf of our Supreme Knight Patrick Kelly to the suffering people of Ukraine, and also to the Knights of Columbus, who are doing such wonderful humanitarian work. It's this: we remember, we've not forgotten. And in the course of this visit, which lasted in total about 4 days, both in Kyiv and Lviv, I was able to meet with many widows, lost their husbands in the war, orphans who had lost mothers and fathers, mothers who had lost sons in the war, Knights of Columbus chaplains who are doing heroic work, and knights who are providing all kinds of humanitarian services.
Can you tell us, Your Excellency, about that, a little bit more about that meeting with the widows, and what type of help is being administered to them, and what kind of help can and should we give them?
So one night, a prayer service was organized, and there would have been maybe 40 or so women who had lost their husbands, a number of mothers who had lost their sons as well. And so we gathered in prayer, and then we went to the church hall for a supper. And then during supper with interpreters, I went from person to person, and all I had to say was, "For whom do you wish me to pray?" And these women would share with me the story of how they lost their husbands. Some of them were combatants, but some of them were simply innocent civilians. Some were doing civilian defense. But they would tell me the heartbreaking story of how what happened to their husbands. And also they would tell me about their children as well. It took a long time to hear all these stories, but no one left. Everyone wanted to talk. And I must say, their stories resonated deeply in my heart.
Your Excellency, could you tell us, give us a sense of what the state of the church is in Ukraine, and how has the war impacted the faithful?
My impression of the church in Ukraine, both the Latin Rite Catholics and also the larger group, which is the Greek Catholics, they are very resilient. Every place I went, I saw lots of faithful coming to church, praying. I think their faith is very, very much a part of them, and it's really crucial as they try to cope with war and the ravages of war. I was really impressed by the faith and resiliency of the Ukrainian Catholics.
Archbishop William Laurie, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about all this. We really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a leading lady, what Pope Francis says about receiving help from the Blessed Virgin Mary. Plus, a lawmaker in England releases the details of an assisted suicide bill. Day in the public session at the U.S. Bishops Conference in Baltimore, Maryland, and one church leader is calling on Catholic hospitals to do more to protect children from gender ideology. Writing in the National Catholic Register, Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska, notes that a recent report says around 150 Catholic hospitals participated in some form of so-called gender-affirming care for minors. He adds in part, quote, "Many Catholic hospitals are participating in this ugly evil, and full investigations should be carried out. And they should be done with the same vigor with which we have investigated other abuse of children taking place within Catholic institutions." In today's public sessions, U.S. bishops voted to advance two American causes for canonization. Both votes were overwhelming. The two are Servant of God Gertrude Agnes Barber on the left, a laywoman and special needs advocate, and Benedictine Sister Anela Zervis. And we'll have much more on this story tomorrow as the meetings in Baltimore wrap up. On the language of a proposal in England and Wales to loosen assisted suicide has been released ahead of a vote by lawmakers later this month. The bill was introduced by a member of parliament from the Labour Party. It would give terminally ill people in England and Wales the right to choose to end their life. A separate bill is under discussion in Scotland. Some of the guidelines say that only a person that has mental capacity to make the choice can choose to end their life. Other requirements include that two doctors have to say the person is eligible with a week in between the prognosis. Also, a judge would have to rule in favor of the person seeking to end their life. And the patient would have to wait 14 days before acting. The first round of votes are set for November 29th. Well, finally tonight, Pope Francis reminds the faithful that one way to find our Lord is to seek help from the Blessed Virgin Mary.
La Madonna è la mamma che ci porta per mano verso Gesù.
During his weekly talk at the Vatican, the Holy Father reflected on devotion of the Blessed Mother, saying, whenever we face a challenge or need help, Mary encourages us through her example and intercession to also say our own yes to the Lord. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.